We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You're listening to From the Chair, and I'm your host, Mike Hamilton. Join us each episode as we talk to athletic directors from across America. We're going to talk about topics like leadership, career development, issues of the day, and I can promise you we're going to have some fun along the way, too. So sit back, listen in, and let's dive in. Let's go.
All right, welcome into today's episode. My guest today, Kent State Athletic Director Randell Richmond. Randell, thanks for being with me, man.
Mike, it's a pleasure being with you, and I love the music coming in, setting the mood. I appreciate that.
You know, when we started talking about the intros and so forth, I said it. I wanted something a little jazzy or whatever, and I don't know if that meets the mark, but that's the goal. So
that
here we go.
Meets right? My mark, man. I like the vibes.
All right. Well, thanks for joining me and spending a few minutes just catching up. And you know, I think the focus on our conversation today is going to be a little bit around your career and what you're doing now that you're in your first year at Kent State and just some thoughts on leadership, that kind of thing. So I want to jump right in on that. You know, in doing some of my research and background reading or whatever, I think this was actually an Akron paper when you were first named Kent State Athletic Director. You made the comment that you feel like you're a statistical anomaly. And, you know, I'd love for, I know a little bit now from having read more what you mean when you said that, but I'd love for you to unpack that for a few minutes with our audience to hear a little bit about why you said that.
Yeah, it's really a true blessing to be here in front of you having this conversation. You know, for myself growing up in inner city Akron, you know, neither of my parents made it past the 11th grade. It's not because they weren't diligent. It's just the nature of situational poverty that you're growing up in. You know, I mean, we had a lot of love and a lot of hard work, but that didn't yield to some educational results, nor certain means that would have been easier for me, maybe, as I was growing up. Those things weren't there. I'm the first person to graduate from high school in my family, and then the first person to go on to college, then graduate from college, and then grad school, right? So that's the environment in which I'm growing up in. If I look back, now that I'm back home, the two grade schools I went to are torn down now. You know what I mean? Oh, so if you look at those environments that, you know, I'm receiving my education, it really is a blessing along the way that I was able to be in college, let alone be the first athletic director at Kent State University, first Black athletic director at Kent State University at the age of 39 with my first real interview. Like, these things just don't happen to people, you know, Mike. So when I look back at the breadcrumbs of my life, I tell people that I'm here in front of them for three reasons. That's God's favor, people who cared, and sports, because it's those things that led me to higher education. And it's within higher education that I was able to engage with other transformational leaders, learn my why. My purpose was to be a transformational leader who has a positive influence on people's lives that resonates well beyond sports. And that's based on me looking at the breadcrumbs of my life that got me here. So I just want to pour that energy, that positive ripple effect, into other people so then they can become the first of something in their lives. They can beat the odds that are stacked against them. Because when you add up those odds, I shouldn't technically be in front of you here today, but I am. And I know it's for a larger purpose. So I'm blessed to fill that role.
That's a great background, man. So I've got a friend that talks about he feels like he's a turtle on a fence post. And if a turtle gets on a fence post, somebody put them there. They didn't get there on their own. And so it's, yeah, I actually think it's a great, you know, great little analogy or whatever. But, you know, so you've referenced God's favor and people around you in sport. So who are some of the folks that helped put you on that fence post, you know, that lifted you up along the way? That's the first question. Then part B is, you know, we're going to, well, let's just unpack that first. And then I want to talk about the power of sport.
Yeah, throughout that, teachers, you know what I mean? What happens with people? I heard this one podcast the other day said, say yes. What happens with people along the way? They've been through this walk of life and they've seen a lot of people come through. So I had different teachers along the way who would say, hey, Randell, you should volunteer for this. Hey, you should get involved with this community thing. Hey, you should be in student government. Hey, what about class president? Stuff like that along the way. It was teachers and educators and people in the community, you know what I mean, who said, hey, I think you got a little bit something special in you. Give my mom a lot of credit just for the type of character she's always had. My grandma for the love, getting us in church early on. And then after that, it became a lot of educators. Again, you know, as I'm there at Baldwin Wallace, you know, there's a guy named Mark West. You know, he was like, wait, I think you should be involved in these student things that we got going on here. And me being involved in all those things led me to a woman named Dean Reading. And I'm sitting there, Mike, and I'm in my fifth year playing football. I tore my MCL my freshman year. And I was going to be a math and history teacher. And here I am in my methods teaching. And I'm going to doing all that stuff in the schools. And I realized that I will be one of those teachers who will burn out in 5 years. Because for me, I realized at that moment, I wanted to educate, not teach. And that was a lot of teaching towards a test environment. And that wasn't going to feed me. So I went to Dean Reading. I'm like, hey, Dean Reading, I got one semester left and I don't want to teach. And she's, I was like, what am I going to do? It's like, well, Randell, do you want to do what I do? I'm like, oh, my God, Dean Reading. Absolutely. That is a great idea. Hey, by the way, what does a dean do? Again, I'm a first generation college student. I have no idea what a dean technically does. She's like, well, it's okay. Let's look into grad school and that'll be able to get you started. I'm like, yeah, that sounds like a great plan. Hey, break down what's grad school again for me. So she begins to tell me about grad school and how she teaches at Kent State. And that's what led me to Kent State. Here at Kent State, Bob Heller was a guy working in compliance. He had many resumes in front of him. A lot of people who were Kent State student athletes that he could have waited on. He saw my resume. And because I said yes to a lot of the extracurriculars, he said it stood out. And then all of a sudden, he gives me my first chance in compliance while I'm here. And then Lane Kennedy, who was the athletic director here. I still meet with Lane now that I'm back here at Kent State once a month, just to tap into all the wisdom that he has. And he was just very instrumental in letting me know how walk around leadership, what it looks like, you know, the student-centered approach, what that looks like. I didn't realize it at the time, but I was living it under his regime. You know, I mean, then, of course, once I got over there to Old Dominion University, Dr. Camden Wood Selig was huge for me. He absolutely was huge for me because when I was on his senior staff, I wasn't on his senior staff as an academics compliance student athlete development person. I was on his senior staff as a senior leader. Those just happened to be the areas that I oversaw. And it totally changed how I felt about being on that team. So that was huge for me. Then President Broderick there, the access across campus was big. And one last guy that I got to give shout out to, Ken Brown. That was Wood's deputy. Ken Brown technically ran that search to get me to Old Dominion University. And that's when I got the education to understand why you have athletics on a college campus. You know, there's many other people along the way who I've left out that have had an impact. But those are the people, you know what I mean, that helped along this trajectory.
Yeah, wow, that's awesome stuff. So when you're talking about, you know, thinking about, you know, getting involved in sports as a young man, a lot of us go about that as just, hey, we're having fun, right? We're hanging with our boys, doing our thing, and we're in the neighborhood, or we join a team. And when did it become, how early did you realize in that process of playing ball that it was a means to an end? It was going to give you a launch pad to do something something more. Did that click early on, or was it something that somebody tapped you on the shoulder one day and said, hey, man, this is something that can take you into a different place? I'm curious about that.
That's a great question. I never thought about it. When I look back at it all, I just like playing sports. I just really love to play. And it was just really fun. I mean, we look at all the different things that are out there. And you ask, okay, if you're dating a young lady and you're engaged, you know, you're going to tell you, okay, you got to get up at 6 a.m. You got to run gassers. You got to break your arm. You're going to dislocate an elbow. You're going to be in rain, sleet, and snow. And this is what you're going to do for over a decade. You'd be like, I don't know about this relationship. You know what I mean? But that's what I did. That's what many of us have done in athletics. That's how you know you love, absolutely love your sport. So that was something that was very evident to me. But again, me not really having access or people who can tell me about this space to get to college, I was just a fan of sports. And Florida State and Peter Warrick had a big influence on me as a young man. And so when I was making my college decisions, I knew at that time, based on my size, I was Akron Player of the Year, but I'm 5'6". You know, I mean, 140 pounds. I'm not going to Florida State, Mike. And that was very evident to me at that time. So I said, well, I'll go to a school that has Florida State colors. So I ended up signing a letter of intent with Walsh University, D2 up here in Canton. But I went to Ball and Wallace. And I really enjoyed the environment. Because I enjoyed that environment, my thought process, if I can go, I'm D2 athlete at best. I'll go here to Walsh and I'll probably play my last 2 years. Maybe I'll start. But I went to a campus visit to Ball and Wallace up there in Cleveland, and I just love the environment. It's one of those things that you just know that this is your environment. I thought, well, I'll play all 4 years here if I do things right. And I just want to play because I know I'm not going to the NFL. So let me just play a sport I love and see what the educational environment provides. So that was the thought process of the vehicle. Later on, it became evident, you know what I mean, how I was really using that vehicle while I was at Ball and Wallace, which led me to Kent State as a graduate assistant. And here I am now.
You know, I'm offline at some point. I'm going to connect you to my youngest son, who is 5'7", 150 pounds. He's a DB and a wide receiver. He's really fast and a talented kid, but he's convinced he can't play in college because he's short. And I've tried to help him understand that it's not the case. So we're going to connect you guys and let you have a little word with him, okay? Does that sound all right?
I got him covered. I got him covered.
All
trust
right.
me.
All right. All right. Hey, You did, after you started at Kent State in compliance, you worked with Lane, yeah. And then you were given an opportunity. You were there for a while, 10 years, if I recall correctly, right? And then you moved to work with Wood. You've alluded to that a minute ago. And I told you I've talked to Wood in advance of this conversation. And one of the things he and I were just discussing was, you know, so many times, unfairly so, in today's industry and hiring process, folks who sort of are perceived as guys who've worked on the internal side of the business or whatever, we feel like maybe they don't get the fair shake, right? At the end of the day, leaders lead, you know? And one of the things he said to me was, hey, look, Randale's got an incredible capacity to lead. And yes, he didn't have what some folks say is the external side of the house, but his ability to handle his business for what he was responsible for and then engage more broadly with others in the department was something that set him apart. And he had an external or an extrovert type of a personality that helped with that. So I'm curious, you know, is it unfair that that there's a perception that if you're on the internal side, hey, you need external, you need to shine your external skill set. You need to have some experience there. Obviously, you defeated that and you did it by your work ethic and so forth. So now that you're in the chair and you reflect back on that, thoughts on that subject?
Yeah. You know, is it unfair? Is it not unfair? I think things are pendulum swings. You know, for me, you know, knowing that that was typically the path, you just look at the numbers. You know, I mean, that's another thing of a statistical anomaly that typically the internal roles weren't getting there. Somewhere around 80% came from an external role, especially at the Division I FBS level. You know, so I never really focused on that too much. I just focused on, you know, I mean, how I engage my units. And, you know, what I can do across campus broadly. And then, you know, Mike, there was a time where I was really trying to shed that internal, you know, brand, you know, but it always came back. And I said, you know what, it's just meant to be. So what I'm going to do is I just refocus my brand on leadership. You know what I mean? Because anything, whether it's fundraising, whether it's, you know what I mean, moving a brand forward, maybe it's connecting to a university. At the end of the day, it takes someone who can get together with people, define a common cause, share that definition, and get us to move forward in the same journey. You know, I mean, many of plans are great plans, but the only plans that truly work are the plans that work together. And that's mainly what I began to understand. And then understanding the role of athletics on a campus to move forward the university's missions and goals and brand. So once I began to understand that, I said, well, how are all these things tied together? And then when the questions about my external experience and fundraising came about, I said, well, if you're going to tell me that the key to fundraising is relationships, you're not going to find a person who has stronger, deeper relationships than myself. You know, and then I began to tell stories about how the relationships that I had with many of the people on campus in the community then led to us putting together different fundraising plans and having success that we haven't had before. While that might not have been on a large scale because it wasn't my area that I was working in day to day, some of those same tenets, the same fabric, the same system that leads and yields those results of big gifts, I was doing in terms of relationships and connections that I was working with people. You know, so that's how I looked at it. You know, I mean, anything that I've ever done that I've done well, I've done together, you know, with a number of people. So that's the exciting piece for me. And when it comes to the external piece, that's what I focused on. And really that leadership, I really began to hone in on exactly what it meant to be, whether it's podcasts, whether I tell a lot of people I get a lot of leadership from hip hop. You know, I mean, they don't, you know, believe it at first, but it's just poetry over beats. Right. So if I'm reading a book or a podcast or poetry, it's all the same thing. You know what I mean? So that I just pull from all these different spaces and areas. And that's how I begin to understand and connect with people in a different way. And then now I found how we all share a common cause. So now we're all moving in the same direction. So it could be unfair for certain people. I think what's happening is presidents, boards are starting to look broadly and say, okay, we got many issues and they're not just financial. So let me see if I can go ahead and find the best leaders out there to be the head of our program, see how we can move forward.
Yeah, that's powerful. So we've talked about people, we've talked about influence, we've talked about sport, we've talked about, you know, jobs. You know, you attended the NCAA Leadership Institute, and I know that probably was very helpful. What are the other sort of either whether it's on campus, in the region, league level, national level, you know, for those who are out there and saying, okay, what do I do? What seminar do I go to? What's most impactful, you know, relationship building or learning perspective? What are the places that you landed that you feel like were informative in your growth?
Absolutely. The NCAA Leadership Institute, and I got to give a shout out to Corinth Patterson. She works up there at the MAC, the Mid-American Conference office. She was on me, Mike, each year. Randell, you got to get in this. And she was so right. I built in great friendships, foundation, understood that I wasn't in this industry for me, but for everyone else, because I went through that Leadership Institute. And I got lifelong friends who I still connect with to this day from that institute. T.J. Shelton, who just got the job at Case Western, is one of those people who served. It was one of my original mentors. So that was very paramount for me. Then after that, Wood Seeley got me access to Lead One. At the time, Dutch Balkman, it was his last year as a D1A Institute. And I got to see all the people in that room in the power of connection and the power of leadership and, you know, that effective connection piece. And that was really eye-opening for me. So then when it became Lead One, I was able to get access again. And I take copious notes. I sit right there in the front and I take a billion notes and I begin to share them with people, because maybe it didn't serve me, but it will serve someone else who's going to serve this industry, who's going to serve our young people. So that's what I began to do. Then after that, you know, I mean, Lorna D, she's working there at SMU. She was huge for me in getting me access to College Athletics Leadership Symposium. You know, I mean, that's where I met Will Reese, and he has been really great for me in giving me access to different environments from the College Athletics Leadership Symposium. And they've become people who I've really connected with over the years. So those three programs have been paramount for me. Other than that, it's just connecting across campus, and it wouldn't be programs as much. At Old Dominion University, I was on the President's Task Force for Inclusive Excellence. I ended up co-chairing that. Mike, I didn't have that background, you know what I mean? But it became one of things where we can lead people in the same direction towards a common goal. And that, you know, reared its head again. So here I am doing another job. But that was an eye-opening experience. And when we began to deal with not only the pandemic, but the social unrest and the injustices that we were seeing as a country, it gave me a baseline to then show up for my people and to show up for our student athletes when that time came. And that began to put in structures there at ODU with Dr. Ron Moses over there as well, to really feed our students the information that they were seeking. So it was these external things, but it was also being available across campus to serve the greater campus community.
Well, one of the takeaways on all that really is, for those who have the opportunity to be engaged in certain things, jump in, right? I mean, take advantage of those things. You know, ironically, something you and I share in common, I actually was part of the first ever D1A Development Institute class. So, awesome. You know, that was back when we walked, you know, in the snow backwards to get to school, that kind of thing. But I wasn't there. And by the way, you gave a shout out to Cal's to highlight that for a moment. That's in Nashville this year. So I hope maybe you'll get a chance to come down this way. Hey, so I wish I'd gotten the chance to talk to Todd Dyken, your president, beforehand, who, you know, that I know very well from my time together with him at Tennessee. But part of my conversation with Wood, we were talking about your preparation for the AD interview. And you talked about first interview, you're 39, you land the job. And one of the things that Wood highlighted, other than just your growth pattern and who you are and what you're about, was your, he called it meticulous preparation, right? Yeah. reams and reams of paper, so to speak, research, all that kind of stuff. You know, there are a lot of folks that listen to this podcast, Randell, who are, you know, junior staff members, they're assistant ADs, they're associate ADs, they want to be an AD, you know, they're trying to figure out how they pour into these opportunities that come to them. And I'd love for you, you know, I'm not asking you to share trade secrets or anything like that, but just your mental preparation on trying to get ready for your first AD interview and the background work you did to get to that point.
Yeah, meticulous is probably the right word. You know, when I was looking at it years ago, I started a folder called Path to the Chair. So it was an AD folder. So all those notes I was taking at Cal's, all those meetings I was going to, I would even look at the D1 ticker. And when people got their jobs, I would even look at their press conferences and take things that I thought were awesome, put them in this Word document, and just be prepared for different quotes that made sense. And even if I didn't understand them at the time, like not really knowing anything about multimedia rights and things like that, I would log them and just put them in that file, just so when I did have an opportunity to get a chance to understand a little bit more, I'll be able to speak, you know, intelligently towards them. You know, so I created this document, this file, and that's when I began to create my profile, my why, my purpose, value systems, all the things that you hear from people that are important. Now they begin to have texture to them. Not only were they on a paper, they began to actually make sense to me. And then the different, you know, I mean, questionnaires that I went through from beforehand, it was just building up to be a refinement for this opportunity that I had at Kent State. So it really started with there. And it's going back through all those notes that I was taking at Kyle's or at Lead One, you know, and then anything that I got from Wood along the way will go into that file. The different things that I did at ODU in terms of leadership, the things that I did in terms of hiring coaches, evaluating coaches, maybe moving along from coaches or staff members. I began to dump it all in a meticulous fashion into this document and file. And I really got to give a shout out to Eric Wood, the AD over there at La Tech. He helped me in terms of preparation, in terms of what the outline looks like. You know, so that was huge for me seeing that. And then, you know, and as I'm going through the interview process and preparing all the information, I got great advice from Jeff Hathaway, and it was concise and precise. He said, Randell, I've never seen anybody win an interview in the first 5 minutes, but I've seen people lose them. You know, so he gave me great advice in that sense. Thereafter, and this is atypical of people, I really partnered with a guy named Greg Loss. Greg Loss was here at Kent State my first time around, and we partnered for many of the things that we had built together here at Kent State. And Greg was right by my side throughout the process. We'd be up to midnight going through different interview questions, just putting out a list of questions that they might ask. And then I'm looking at my top five examples, being able to pull from them. As I'm crafting my PowerPoint to go over through for a presentation, I'm presenting it to Greg. He's timing me, and he's all the way there at Texas Tech. You know what I mean? So he's just in the trenches with me. And I was blessed to get with President Dyken. Before I signed a contract, my first deal was to negotiate how I can get Greg Loss here to Kent State University alongside me. That's how important he was to me in my process. So while I had all these things that I had been building up over the years, when it came down to the end of it, I had people yet again who believed in my purpose, who were right by my side, helping me prepare to get ready for this opportunity. And while I would say it was preparing a lot, I didn't look at it like that. I just look at that. This is the work to do. This is the shot I got. Let me go ahead and put my time in.
Hey, preparation matters, man. And, I'll tell you this. I had, I had been, you know, in the event that I was going to be named athletic director, I actually went as far as preparing and almost reciting what I would say in a mock press conference in the shower some mornings, right? And where that paid, let me tell you where that paid off at the end. I got the word that I was going to be named the athletic director, and I was an hour and a half away from Knoxville, and the president wanted to do a press conference in about 2 hours from the time I got the call. And so I literally had to rush home, shower, put on a suit, go to the president's house. There was no podium. There was no audience other than, you know, a bank of like 20 media members and their cameras. And I stood on the front steps of the president's house, you know, and had to talk with no notes. Right. And this is your first exposure as the athletic director of the University of Tennessee. And thank goodness I had thought through what I might say if I ever was given that actual opportunity. Right. And so I had to go back and watch it again. It's been 100 years ago now. But I think it was relatively fluid because I had prepared, to your point.
Fail to plan to fail.
Right. Yeah. So you've now referred a couple times during this conversation about your desire to be a transformational leader. Okay. Mm-hmm. Those are two very powerful words, and they can have different meanings, I'm certain. But in the context of how you view that, what is a transformational leader, and how are you planning to be a transformational leader?
That's right. Transformational leader to me, in a nutshell, is a leader who creates other leaders, who creates other leaders, who creates other leaders. And, you know, I look at it as that positive ripple in the pond. You know, you have a ripple in the pond of positivity that can become a wave. A wave can then become a tsunami, and waves are the only thing that we've ever seen that actually truly change continents. So a positive ripple in a wave can change the world. That's how I look at it. So that's that leadership and creating other leaders. And we have a blessed opportunity, Mike. We deal with a transitional, transformational moment of young people. That's the job that we have. And some of the most driven young people alongside the ROTC, some of the most structured, driven young people are going to be the leaders of whatever the world becomes. And people often say, hey, listen, it's not brain surgery. And they're right. It's not brain surgery. But I look at that in a different connotation than I used to. Like, I'm thinking about brain surgery, how many people actually need brain surgery. And it is a big deal. But I'm looking at a number of lives that we impact on a daily basis. So while it's not brain surgery, the volume of transformational and transitional lives that we impact is huge. It's grand. And it's a great responsibility, and I really honor it. So if we're able to engage my exec team, then engage our leadership team, and then engage our head coaches, now we can create these leaders who are tapping into their student athletes as being the next leader. So that really had an impact on our mission statement. And I want to give the previous AD, Joel Nielsen, credit because he had graduate student athletes and win championships. And I do think that's the goal. But we did add something to that, is graduate student athletes boldly prepared for life after sport and win championships. That's where that transformational leadership comes into play. Because again, if we are able to equip them, I can only imagine what they're going to do to positively impact and change this world. So when I talk about transformational leadership, it starts there. And I was just reading, I got a podcast from Coach Chris Finwer, we call him Finney, over there at ODU. He is my first coach that I ever had as a sport administrator. And I consider him a colleague. I consider him a mentor, a friend. And he sent me a podcast. It's from a guy named Tim Kite. And Tim was talking about this thing called a performance pathway. And it talked about how leadership drives culture, cultures drive behavior, and then those behaviors yield your results. So when we were talking about leadership and being a transformational leader, it starts with me first. And then it gets to my exec staff, how I lead them. Then it gets to our head coaches. And then once we create that culture of transformational leadership, now the behaviors in our department dictate that. That gets and seeps down to our student athletes. And then that's how we have that impact on the greater world.
Mm. All right. So first generation college attendee. You were second most famous athlete ever out of Akron. Let's call it that, right? Yeah. So then you work at Kent State 10 years. You go to ODU for 7 or 8, whatever it was. You're 39. You get your first AD opportunity. You're coming home. You know, you get to come home for your first AD opportunity. You know, now the work begins, right? Mm-hmm. And I get a sense of who you are and what you're about from all the conversation we've already had. But, mm-hmm. you know, the fact that you're at home, you know, there could be, and I know you didn't go to Kent State, but I'm talking about being back where mm-hmm. you're from, right? there are people that set expectations around that, right? You know, hey, Randall's my boy. He's here. You know, whatever. They look at you as somebody who's done something big. You know, I think I already know where this is headed, but just, you know, how do you prepare for what's next? This is not the final thing, right? And so now what do you do to execute on this opportunity that you've been given? And you're a year in, and you're a year in in the middle of a crazy pandemic and all the changes in college athletics, et cetera, et cetera. How do you say, all right, now how do I'm in the role. How do I prepare for what's ahead of me for the rest, what can be a very long career?
Yeah, I've got great relationships, and they're not vast, they're not a whole bunch, you know what I mean? But the close friends who I have, they understand who I am, and they've always known. They understand that Randall's here and work works. So that's what he's going to do. They know I'm going to go and put that time in. And then whenever I can get a chance to get kicked back and just be, you know what I mean, relaxed and normal with my friends, I take advantage of it when I can. But at the end of the day, you know what I mean, getting the job, that's just getting the job. The purpose is once you have it and the impact that you have throughout it and because of it. So it's kind of like anything else, man. If you're going to build anything that's going to last, there's nothing more important than foundation. So that's what we began to focus on. So the first thing was seeing that I can get my team around me, and then we did some restructuring for that, you know, and then we created this executive leadership team. And with that executive leadership team, that was going to be the foundation that we were going to lead with. So then the most important thing to me, and it's boring for everyone else, was to solidify our mission and then to solidify our guiding principle. And I heard this from Lee Reed when he was the athletic director at Cleveland State when I was a GA. And I read a paper from Lee Reed because I wanted to reach out to him and talk to him. He was a black male as an athletic director, and you didn't see that anywhere. And I said, well, I'm going to reach out to him. By the time I got to him, he already left the Georgetown. But one thing that he had said was the best athletic departments are student-centered, coach-led, and administrator-supported. And for some reason, I never forgot that, right? I didn't know what it meant at the time, Mike, but I never forgot it. Going throughout this process, I truly understood it, all right? And that became our guiding principle. When we talk to everyone, this is how we're going to make decisions so far how we can meet our mission. So that was the most important thing. Anytime you build a house, there's nothing more important than foundation, because the higher you go, the more flimsy it gets. So you need that strong core. So that's why that mission and this, our guiding principle, we speak about every day. So then when I put it into the performance pathway, you know, I mean, put it into that system, now it becomes, how are we going to get this message out to all of our coaches? How are we going to get it out at all of our department meetings? So we're going to break it down each time, because it is that vitally important. Because when people don't know why you're making your decisions, they make it up. And they typically make it up with negative connotation. So we first need to share a definition of what we mean by these principles, what we mean by our mission statement. And we share that definition. Now people have a better why of decisions that are made when they weren't in the huddle. As our Suzette McQueen, our SWA, often says, if you ain't in the huddle, you don't know the play. So we can go ahead and try to get them to play by helping them share this definition with us. So that's been the most important part. And then it's been the partnerships across campus. Hey, what's our campus mission? All right, got it. Now, how does athletics fit within this campus mission? Okay, now how can we be more of a presence on campus from a leadership standpoint to meet this mission? So now you're looking at the greater leadership of the institution. They understand that, okay, athletics is behind this. So athletics is all together on what we're trying to do. So that's been the main piece. And, you know, when I got here, we had a strategic plan that was probably about 3/4 of the way there. And what it needed was our value system and how we're going to push it forward. And that's where Greg Gloss, Kirby had him do their strategic plan there at Texas Tech. And then we had Dr. Kathy Wilson, who's been our FAR here for 18 years. And she was spearheading that right here on campus. So I came in right at the time where it was time to finish that off. So that was a blessing in and of itself. So that's really how we've been keeping this traction going. You know what I mean? And I'm able to dive in and do everything that works. I have my wife, Jay Alicia, with our 3 kids at home, getting them all into sports and all ready to go. So now I don't have to worry about that. I can just integrate them in the campus because she has that, you know what I mean, rolling. So early on, it was a lot of people, hey, we want to see you. The kids are back, you know, the grandparents and, you know what I mean, all that's there. But they know Randall's got to go to work, you know, because we got a job to do and there's a greater purpose that's here. So I've had all these people around me yet again, setting it up for success.
Man, I love it. I look forward to watching your success, Randall, and know that I'm here to help any way I can along the way as a friend. I've got to end with one more question, because this came up in my, this came up with my conversation with Wood. Wood says that you were in charge of the ODU annual ugly Christmas sweater party. And he swears that you have a whole closet of ugly Christmas sweaters. And, you know, for everybody that's listening, is there truth to that, or was that hyperbole?
Well, listen, I'm big on shenanigans, man. I like to start the shenanigans. Anything that can bring people together to have a good time. Like, it started here at Kent, you know what I mean, with different things, with softball programs we were doing, and it's just different stuff that we would do. So the shenanigans started early on, Mike. And then we got the ODU, and I had a team of people, and then we just looked for ways to infuse fun. But I'll say about the ugly Christmas, man, I only had one ugly Christmas sweater. This is the first time I realized Wood thought all my sweaters were ugly. You know what I mean? So I'm going to have to give him a call after this, and we got to have a talk, man. So he's hating on my swag at this point.
That's awesome, man. Hey, thanks for being with me today, man.
Mike, I appreciate you and your energy, and it's always great. You've done a great job in this industry, and I appreciate every moment I get a chance to learn from you. You're great for our president, Todd Dykin, here. You bring him balance, you know what I mean? And you bring him perspective, and that's been nothing but a benefit to me. So I appreciate you beyond measure, because he's an awesome guy and he has you to lean on.
Well, he's a great one. So, hey, listen, you've been listening to From the Chair with Mike Hamilton, and this week's guest has been Kent State Athletic Director Randell Richmond. What a great interview. Look forward to watching your continued success, Randell. We'll see you next week, folks. Have a good day.
1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.